Beer with Pleasant Strangers, Episode 7. Well, welcome to another episode of Beer with Pleasant Strangers, and tonight we're doing a little something different. We are actually, I'm here at a bottle share at Plan 9 Ale House, and we're doing something really cool. We are recreating a Firestone Walker anniversary blend. The blend that's being recreated is the 20th anniversary blend. Our resident biochemist scientist, Stephen, has broken down the constituent elements and brought all of the individual bottles, and we are now blending them together. And then we've broken into three teams, and we're going to create our own blends with the same ingredients and see what people come up with. See if they come up with something that people think is better or worse or just the same. I was on team number one, and we decided upon a blend of 20% Parabola, 15% Velvet Merkin, 30% Bravo, 30% Heldorado, and 5% Rye Double DBA. Actual Firestone Walker 20th anniversary blend is 40% Parabola, super heavy on Parabola. And it's actually got 20% Sticky Monkey, 17.5% Velvet Merkin, 12.5% Bravo, 10% Heldorado, and 0% Rye Double DBA.
All right, Steven, you put this whole thing together, this whole Firestone Walker 20th anniversary slash make your own blend night that we did here. You said you've been thinking about doing this for like a long time. What was your thoughts?
Well, I first had Firestone anniversary number 13, so that would have been like 7 years ago. Yeah. I was down in Paso and just at a liquor store and got a bottle. And I brought a couple of bottles back, and I just loved it. I just had just really started to get into barrel-aged beers, and this was just like so complex. And at the time, I was working in biotech. And I brought the bottles into work to share with all my other scientists. And, you know, there was a lot of people that were just really impressed with the complexity of flavors that you're getting from that. Like former wine drinkers were suddenly thinking, this is pretty cool. And that same year, we decided at work, let's blend beer.
Oh, cool.
So we were inspired by Firestone 13. Could we recreate that? But the components weren't available. They hadn't even, like maybe Parabola had been bottled, but you couldn't find it yet. It's like
right,
the first
yeah.
release was very limited.
Yeah, totally.
So we just went to the liquor store and bought as many barrel-aged beers as we could find. Maybe Bourbon County, a lot of Sierra Nevada beers.
Those good beers though, good
yeah.
stuff, yeah, okay.
And so, we created a spreadsheet, and there was about 15 of us. We created blends, and we had a bottle of 13, and we said, can we do something similar to that? And we made some pretty cool blends. And actually, at the time, the company just paid for the beer. It wasn't even out of my pocket.
So, are you serious?
Yes.
That's awesome.
So oh, when I bought the components for the beer, I bought, like, a case of each.
Okay.
Right. So we had a blind taste test of all the blends, and then the winning blend, we actually got a big bucket and recreated it at like large scale, like 5 liter scale or something.
Oh, wow.
No,
okay.
2 liter scale. And, you know, just poured bottles and bottles in there, made the blend, and then, because I was a home brewer, we just capped it. And for the next couple weeks, that was our company blend that we would serve at our Friday happy hours.
Wow.
So it was...
So where do you work again? How do I get a job at this place?
It was a biotech company that doesn't exist anymore.
That's cool.
And we went public during the biotech bubble, so we had a lot of money to spend.
Oh, yeah.
Eventually, it all went to hell, but it was that... It was an amazing time.
It was the heyday, yeah.
Yeah. And I thought we did a really good job blending. We created a blend that was better than the sum of its parts. And I think that's the ultimate goal of blending. So everyone was happy with it, but I still felt like it still wasn't as good as Firestone 13.
Ah.
So then after that, they started to release Parabola and Tsukaba. And if they come to the Bay Area, I'd go to their release parties to try to get bottles of that, just collecting as many of the component bottles, thinking one day I'm going to make the ultimate blend using Firestone components. The next year, Firestone 14 came out, which I still think is their best blend.
Which we recreated tonight.
Yes.
Based upon your calculations. Okay.
But that had Bravo in it. And up till now, they've never bottled Bravo.
Ah, that's correct. Okay.
And that beer is... Bravo, what got bottled is interesting. It's not very an exciting beer on its own. It's great as a component. And I know they did an uber long barrel aged version of it that was like 30 year Bravo, which was pretty good, but that's not what they bottled. So the only reason I bought bottles of Bravo was to be able to make some blends that had it, including trying to recreate 14.
Yeah. Which, and I have to say, actually, the recreation of 14, I think I liked it. I preferred it to the 20th anniversary blend recreation. The only thing I noticed about it was it seemed a little boozier than the other ones, which, you know, all of those beers are fairly strong with the exception of, I think Velvet Merkin's like the lightweight out of the bunch of them.
Right.
So the beers that we blended tonight that you brought were Eldorado, Sticky Monkey, Bravo, Parabola,
Velvet Merkin.
Yeah.
The barley wines were Bravo, which is a brownie wine.
Right, right. It's like an imperial brownie. Yeah.
Sticky Monkey.
Central Coast Quad.
It's still basically barley wine.
Yeah.
Eldorado, the blonde barley wine.
Right.
So they're the three barley wines. Then there was...
No Tsukaba, though, right? No, that was
we didn't
that
bring Tsukaba. Yeah.
Yeah. And that wasn't one of the blends.
Then it was Parabola, which is obviously the Im Stout, and Velvet Merkin, which is the oatmeal stout.
Right.
So those were the five.
Right. This is going back a little bit, but talk about a little bit about, like, you talked about getting into this whole blending craze, but what was it that actually got you into beer, like, in the first place? What was it that got you into craft beer? The initial tipping point for you?
Well, I moved to California from the Midwest, from St. Louis, where I've been drinking Anheuser-Busch and living close to the Anheuser-Busch brewery and just going on the tour for free beer for most of my youth. But then I moved to California to do a postdoctoral fellowship at Stanford, and I rented a room across the street from a brew pub that had recently opened called Gordon Biersch.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And they were doing the German styles, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So after work, I would go drink those beers. They were really solid, and most of my coworkers were actually from Europe, and they thought these were the best beers to drink. But then I discovered Tide House farther down the peninsula, and I started going to small brewers festivals that they had on the peninsula, and even organizing pub crawls using the Caltrain.
Yeah.
So and early on, even when people didn't have websites, I had a website for my pub crawl that was called, but it was basically something like craftbeertrain.org, right? And not just beer train, but it was specifically craft beer.
And this was people, in the Bay Area, right?
In the Bay Area, in San Francisco Bay Area, along the peninsula where Stanford is.
Okay.
People would get on the Caltrain and just do a pub crawl. But I wanted to make sure all the stops were at brew pubs during craft beer.
Yeah, okay.
So we started in Sunnyvale as a place called Stoddard's, then on to Mountain View, the Tide House. In Palo Alto was Gordon Biersch, the first Gordon Biersch. There, then up to San Carlos, to a place called Brewtown. And actually it doesn't exist anymore, but some of the equipment that was there was sold to a brewery called Devil's Canyon, which still exists. So,
oh yeah,
there's this weird sort of where you can connect the dots, from the past to the future, right?
You can follow the breadcrumbs. That's cool.
Then up to San Mateo, there was a place called Barley and Hops, which was epic. This was ahead of its time. They got venture capital money and built a beer palace where it was three floors, hardwood floors on the steps everywhere. They had a single malt bar. They did their own beers. They had a cigar bar and a pool room.
And,
it was the best. It was the best stop. It was the most epic. I don't even remember the beer so much. It's just, it was really
an epic stop. Yeah, sounds like it.
And then the last stop was in Burlingame, and there's a brewery still there called Steelhead, and it's actually the Oregon brewery that has a footprint in the Bay Area. So we would do that for about 5 or 6 years. We did that pub crawl on the Caltrain back and forth. But then my palate started to grow because those were just basically breweries doing 6 or 7 house beers, and it's the same house beers all the time.
Yeah.
So I sort of got bored with going to the same places doing the same house beers.
Not a lot of innovation or changing up of exploring different styles or anything going on. Okay.
And then you discover something like Firestone Walker, and at the time, one of my favorites was Goose Island doing Bourbon County Stout.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to include Sierra Nevada in there as well. So, yeah. That's when I became obsessed. I went from drinking Anheuser-Busch beer to real sort of German beer to really get into California craft beer. And then it just, my palate changed to where bourbon barrelers beers were my thing. And all this time, I'm talking about 20 years of drinking craft beer, I never drank a sour beer.
Really?
Yes.
All that time? Never touched one? But were you aware of them, or were like people tried to get you to try them and you just weren't interested? Or
I wasn't interested. Because I was also homebrewing at the same time. And I always thought if a beer turned sour, I screwed up.
Right. Which is kind of funny because if you think about like the long view history of beer, like at a certain point back in time before yeast was discovered, all beer was technically sour beer, more or less. I mean, not all of it was sour, but it was all wild yeast, right, that fermented it, because no one knew what yeast was.
No, and a lot of the what we call adjuncts now that went into beers, or the bittering agents that went into beers, were just trying to balance out the sour.
Mm-hmm.
Now we think of bittering agents balancing out the sweetness, but those ancient beers were not sweet.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So would you say that then the Firestone Walker was kind of like the point where your palate really, really changed?
Yes.
Yeah. So you love Firestone Walker, obviously. You brought all these awesome beers tonight. What's a brewery that you're super excited about nowadays? Like in present day United States, what's a brewery that you're excited about what they're doing?
Well, now that I live in San Diego, I would have to say Modern Times.
Okay.
I was never really into IPA so much, and especially West Coast IPAs.
Yeah.
But the fact that you can do an IPA that's not just a bitter hop bomb, where for my palate it's more balanced, I think Modern Times is really doing that well. But I have to say, in the meantime, I mentioned I didn't like sours, but...
Right.
Because of Lost Abbey, that was my gateway sour.
Uh-oh.
The red poppy beer. Because I was buying like Angel Share and Deliverance because I thought they're as good as Firestone Walker with their bourbon barrel aged stouts and thing.
Yeah.
And then here out comes red poppy in the Bay Area, and it basically says it's a barrel aged beer that has raspberries or something in it, right? Or cherries, I'm sorry. And well, I'll give it a shot.
Well, what year was that, do you know? Do you remember?
Oh, it was probably only like 6 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so we're like talking like 2011. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So you give it a shot.
And it wasn't like... People tried to serve me some sours that I just... was acetic acid, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah.
I don't want to drink vinegar.
Who does? Someone might.
So it was balanced. It wasn't too tart. It wasn't acidic or acetic. and I began to open my mind to sours. And now probably I have more sour beers in my cellar than I have bourbon barrel-aged beers.
Oh, wow.
In the space of like 6 years.
Yeah.
And you get something like a lambic or a goose where it's more like cheese than vinegar.
Yeah, and to me, lambics and gooses occupy a different, almost a different realm of sour beer. You know, like, you have the sour beer that's like you were talking about, that's kind of like this acidic, like, you get like a chewable vitamin or something like that with fruit flavor in it. Some of those sour beers just like punch you in the face, right? But these gooses, like you're saying, are more savory, like a cheese, like some kind of cave aged, you know, just like something that's got a lot more depth and character to it. It's not fruity. It's just like got a lot of dynamics to it.
But even just a solid saison, I never was really into that before. And there's some saisons where I wouldn't even call them tart.
Yeah.
But I avoided them because I thought they were in the sour category.
Yeah.
But they're some of my favorite styles now.
Yeah.
And not that I shy away from fruited beers, but there are some fruited beers that might be great when they're first released, where you get all that, you get the funk, the little bit of tartness, and then you get all the jam, whatever fruit is in there.
Yeah.
The problem is I feel like a lot of those beers, like Can't Cellar, because a year from now, the whatever wild organisms came in with the fruit are turning that beer more acidic, and then I don't like it anymore.
Mm. So going back to modern times a little bit, modern times has actually got a sour program too. Have you tried many of their sours?
Yeah.
Have you had any that you like?
I like their saisons. Yeah.
Okay. Well, which one? Do you have a particular one? I'm trying to think of their. They've done some kettle sours like. Symmetric Orchestra was a kettle sour.
That was good, and the Asteroid Cowboy,
Asteroid
a Red
Cowboy.
IPA, okay. And one of my favorites from bottles that I bought was actually Kingdom of the Dolls, or Kingdom of Dolls.
Okay. Yeah, it's probably like a, I think it's Kingdom of the Dolls, like you said. Probably play on Valley of the Dolls, I'm guessing. I don't know. I actually haven't had it, so you like that one quite a bit. Okay, cool.
Yeah, but even like, they're doing the fruited sours as well, and I don't on a bottle of it. The Shrine of Forsaken Gods I had at the Festival of the Funk, and it was
the best
beer hands down I had the whole day, and it was really really jammy. I don't own bottles of it, and I wouldn't sure I'd want to sit on bottles of that because I'm afraid it might go too tart.
So again, it's a fruited sour. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks for bringing this whole a little science experiment up to us tonight. This was a lot of fun. It's really cool. So which teams blend won, may I ask? We had three different teams that all created their own blends with any one of up to five of the same constituents that were used in the 20th anniversary blend. Which one got the most votes, do we know?
It was team one, but I have not compared the recipes for team one, two, three. Most had about the same amount of Parabola, which may have been about 20%.
Yeah, okay.
But the Team One blend had more of the barley wines, Eldorado, and the brownie wine.
And the Bravo.
Bravo.
Got it.
I brought in my rye barrel-aged double DBA and as a substitute for regular bourbon barrel aged double DBA, but it's really intense.
Yeah.
So the blends that had too much of that, it was too strong for the blends.
Yeah. Quite a bit like a more. That was the most assertive of the ones you brought.
Yeah.
Like very woodsy. Yeah. All right, Steven. Thanks for coming. Thanks for doing a little interview with me.
My pleasure.
Tune in some other time to hear more interesting interviews, and we'll catch you on the flip side. Don't be a stranger.